Welcome back to the Rena Malik MD podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Rena Malik, urologist and pelvic surgeon. Today in this video, we're going to talk all about erections and erectile dysfunction. We're going to start with talking about anatomy, as well as the different causes of erectile dysfunction, including the question, does pornography cause erectile dysfunction? We're also going to review the three different types of erections. And if you didn't know, there are actually three different types. Then we're going to discuss how to prevent or reverse erectile dysfunction. Are there certain foods you should be eating, and does exercise really make a difference? So let's start with anatomy. Some of the best moments in life are spontaneous, unplanned. But for men dealing with moderate to severe erectile dysfunction, or ED, preparing for intimacy can rob you and your partner of spontaneity. The joy of living in the moment. Now you can restore that spark in your relationship with the AMS 700 implant, a clinically proven permanent solution designed for your satisfaction and your partner's. It's the number one physician-preferred implant. It's built to look and feel natural. Happy partners agree. 92% of patients and 96% of their partners report sexual activity with the implant excellent or satisfactory. It gives you the ability to respond to your partner's wishes in the moment, not minutes or hours later. The AMS 700. No pills, no injections, no waiting. For more information, visit edcure.org/podcast. That's edcure.org/podcast. Sponsored by Boston Scientific. Guys, do you ever find yourself dragging through the day, low on energy, having trouble in the bedroom, or just not feeling like yourself? You might be experiencing something more common than you think, testosterone deficiency or low T. Did you know that low testosterone affects about 40% of American men over 45? As men age, testosterone levels continue to decline. You might notice signs like impotence, changes in sexual desire, depression, reduced muscle mass, or even fatigue. But here's the thing, it's not just about low T, it's about your overall well-being. That's where Rethink Testosterone comes in, a great resource for all men to learn about how testosterone affects their bodies. Rethink Testosterone is your go-to platform with tons of educational content and evidence-based scientific studies that go over everything you want to know about testosterone, from how low testosterone affects you to the common myths about testosterone replacement therapy and options for treatments. So check out RethinkTestosterone.com, your hub for all things testosterone and low T. Rethink Testosterone is on a mission to change the narrative and stigma around men's hormone health. Why wait? Visit RethinkTestosterone.com today and consider checking your testosterone levels. Always remember, you're worth it. Rethink Testosterone, because understanding your health is the first step to owning it. Head to www.RethinkTestosterone.com today and make taking care of your body a priority.
The first thing to understand is your penis is made up of two spongy bodies called the corpora cavernosa. And this is what makes up the erectile tissue. And within each of these spongy bodies is a big artery that brings in blood flow. And there's also several veins around the spongy tissues above something called the tunica albuginea. And these veins carry blood back out. Now, the tunica albuginea is actually a really interesting tissue. It wraps around the corpora cavernosa, and it also expands when you have an erection. And it has very strong parts. It has an inner circular layer as well as an outer longitudinal layer. And it's made up of something called type 1 collagen. And they've actually described it as having as strong of tensile strength as steel. This is important because when those spongy bodies fill up with blood when you have an erection, tunica albuginea then stretches and causes compression of the veins around the corpora that prevents blood from leaving the erection and leads to a more firm erection. And we call this a tumescence phase. So what happens when you get an erection is typically you see something, you hear something, or you feel something that makes you feel aroused. Then the brain sends signals from an area called the hypothalamus to the spinal cord and then down to the nerves to the penis that tells the blood vessels to release certain neurotransmitters. Specifically, one of the big ones is nitric oxide. And you're going to hear me talk about this throughout this podcast over and over again. Nitric oxide is essentially the ignition for erections. This then causes the muscles in the corpora to relax, which allows actually several fold increase of blood to flow into those spongy tissues and fill up in the penis. This then creates pressure in the corpora, making the penis expand, and this then compresses those veins and prevents blood from leaving the penis as well. Then there's an interesting reflex. It's called the bulbocavernosus reflex. And this causes the muscles that are at the base of the penis to contract even more, which then causes the erection to get even more firm and full. Now, to give you some scale, at baseline, when the penis is flaccid, you have about 20 to 40 millimeters of mercury of oxygen in the tissues. But when you get an erection, this nearly triples to 90 to 100 millimeters of mercury. That's really impressive. I don't think there's any other organ in the body that has that much dynamic blood flow. So the other interesting thing to know is that the penis is not actually just what you see on the outside. It actually goes deep into the pelvis and curves downward, which is why if you sometimes get stimulation in the area called the perineum, also what people generally call the taint, then sometimes people find that very erotic or pleasurable because there's still erectile tissue all the way down there. Now, every erection is not created equal. As I mentioned earlier, there are three different types of erections. First is a reflexive erection, which is typically due to physical stimulation and not in your control. Then there are psychogenic erections, and these are the erections you typically think of, right? When you get some sort of stimulation, whether it's physical, auditory, visual, and you have an erection in response to that stimulation. And lastly, there are nocturnal erections, which occur during sleep. So first off, let's start about talking about those reflex erections. Now, these are just physiologic processes, meaning your body does them on their own. And essentially, they probably occur because it's a good way to keep oxygenating those erectile tissues and helping you maintain good erectile function over a lifetime. And usually these occur due to, as I mentioned earlier, some sort of tactile stimulation. Basically, a part of the penis or the genitals might get touched, which then triggers a reflex. So the nerves from the penis go to an area called the spinal erection center, which is in the lower part of the spinal cord or the sacral spinal cord. And this then leads to what's called a random erection. And random erections can occur without mental or emotional arousal, and these can happen on a daily basis. In fact, it's obviously more common in adolescents or young men, which is likely because they have more higher levels of testosterone. Now, I know this can be somewhat embarrassing. So if you find yourself in this situation where you're having a random erection and you want it to go away, let me give you a couple tips. The best approach is typically to distract yourself and focus on something else. Try to focus on breathing, which then maybe allows you to relax the body and avoid stimulating the area any further. Some of the best moments in life are spontaneous, unplanned. But for the man dealing with moderate to severe erectile dysfunction or ED, preparing for intimacy can rob you and your partner of spontaneity, the joy of living in the moment. Now you can restore that spark in your relationship with the AMS 700 implant, a clinically proven permanent solution that's designed for your satisfaction and your partner's. It's the number one physician-preferred implant. It's built to look and feel natural. Happy partners agree 92% of patients and 96% of their partners report sexual activity with the implant being excellent or satisfactory. It gives you the ability to respond to your partner's wishes in the moment, not minutes or hours later. The AMS 700. No pills, no injections, no waiting. For more information, visit edcure.org/RMS. That's edcure.org/RMS. Sponsored by Boston Scientific. On average, most men tend to experience somewhere between 3 to 5 erections a day. And some men actually experience up to 11 erections a day. And these are random, but most of these happen to occur at night. So they're not all reflex erections. Some of them are nocturnal erections. So let's talk about nocturnal erections. With those, you typically have 3 to 4 or more nocturnal erections every single night. These start in early adolescence, and most of the time you won't even really know that you're having an erection, but oftentimes you'll wake up with an erection. And this is often called morning wood or a morning erection. And this is because you often wake up at the end of REM sleep when these are most commonly happening. And as I mentioned earlier, these are a good thing. They're a sign that your penis is functioning normally. It's getting good blood flow. It's getting good nerve function. Your hormones are working well. And so these are actually very good and not something to be embarrassed about and not something that you need to even worry is a negative thing. It's actually a very good sign of overall health. Sometimes this can even help you identify if when you're having a problem with erections during the day, is it physiologic, meaning that there's something wrong in your body, or is it psychogenic? Because if you're still getting nighttime erections and they're very strong and you wake up with a morning erection and yet you're having troubles, it may be more of a psychogenic problem. Now, when you think about psychological problems, what are the different causes of erectile dysfunction? And as I mentioned, one of them is psychogenic. So I tell my patients that almost everyone has some degree of psychogenic erectile dysfunction, because even if you have a medical problem, not being able to get an erection is extremely stressful, right? You don't have an erection and then you're thinking about it all the time. And then when you try to have sex, you're still thinking about it. And so ultimately, even if your body's not working with you, you're always going to have some component of mental anxiety about erections. And it can actually be sort of a vicious cycle, right? You go into having sex, you don't have an erection, you become stressed. You think about it, you ruminate about it, and then you go to have sex a second time. And the whole time you're just thinking, can I get an erection? Is it going to last? Is my partner going to like this? Am I going to be embarrassed? And then, of course, you don't have an erection because you're super stressed, and that just cycles and gets worse and worse. The most common organic or physiologic problem is called vasculogenic erectile dysfunction. Now, this is due to decreased blood flow. And this is followed by a whole bunch of other causes. And we're going to talk about all these individually, but these can include neurologic, hormonal, or drug-induced. So let's start talking a little bit more about psychogenic erectile dysfunction. So this is essentially defined as the inability to achieve or maintain an erection during sex because of psychological factors. And this can include things like performance anxiety, which we talked about, relationship problems, psychological stress, depression, or even other psychological disorders like schizophrenia, for example. And in fact, many mental health conditions and erectile dysfunction are very commonly linked. In fact, in prior studies, they found that people who have erectile dysfunction are 2 to 4 times more likely to have depressive symptoms, pessimistic attitudes, and an overall negative outlook on life. And emotional stress. So this is really sad, right? Now, performance anxiety, as I mentioned, is so common. And it's essentially when you're worried about your sexual performance or being able to satisfy your partner, which then leads to anxiety, which inhibits your ability to get erections. Now, outside of anxiety, psychogenic ED can be due to relationship concerns, communication difficulties, feelings of guilt, and that can be whether it's guilt around your performance or maybe guilt in other things that are going on in your life. It can be related to low self-esteem. And even your cultural or religious beliefs can affect your performance, because if you feel like what you're doing is against your religious or cultural beliefs, that can have a negative impact on your ability to enjoy the experience. Trauma can also be a big part of this. So if you've experienced trauma, whether it's physical, mental, if it's been in a prior relationship, it can rear its ugly head during a sexual encounter. And that makes it really hard to perform and have erections. Now, if you want more detail about performance anxiety and how to treat it, check out my YouTube video where I talk all about psychogenic erectile dysfunction in more detail. But briefly, treatments can include things like cognitive behavioral therapy, sensate focus exercises, and even treating the depression or anxiety with medications as well, or even trying medications for erectile dysfunction like sildenafil or tadalafil to just help make it a little easier to get erections. Next up is vascular erectile dysfunction. So as I mentioned previously, nitric oxide is the ignition for erections. And vascular ED is typically characterized by a decrease in nitric oxide production in the vessels or the vascular endothelium, meaning the lining of the blood vessels. And that's what actually creates nitric oxide. And when these become unhealthy, it can create a whole host of problems, one of which is erectile dysfunction. So in vasculogenic ED, there's either a reduction in arterial blood flow coming in, meaning there's not as much blood coming into the penis, or it's leaving too quickly. So you get an erection, it goes away really fast. Now, why does this happen? Well, when you have vascular medical conditions like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, even diabetes, this can make the arteries thicker, either due to plaque formation or changes in the arteries themselves. And ultimately, this makes it harder for blood to flow through them. And this causes less good blood flow from getting into the penis and ultimately lower oxygen levels in the penile tissues. Now, the big thing here is over time, if you have prolonged issues with blood flow, you might notice that your tissue itself changes because sometimes it can cause the smooth muscle content itself of the corpora cavernosa to develop something called fibrosis or scar tissue, which is irreversible. And so when I talk to you about the things you can do to help prevent ED, I want to make sure you listen very carefully because I don't want you to get to the point where you develop fibrosis of your erectile tissue. Now, I also mentioned venous leak or blood flow leaving too quickly. And often this occurs because the pressure in the penis itself doesn't get high enough, meaning that the arteries.
Men, are you still searching for a solution for your erectile dysfunction? You know, the frustration of pills and injections and pumps? By the time you're ready, the moment may have passed. You and your partner can no longer enjoy the thrill of spontaneity, and scheduling time for intimacy may be a disappointment. Now, there's a way to be ready in the moment for as long as you need. The AMS 700 implant is a permanent ED solution designed for your satisfaction and your partner's. Happy partners agree, with 92% of patients and 96% of their partners reporting sexual activity to be excellent or satisfactory. So go ahead, live in the moment with our clinically proven, physician-preferred AMS 700. Learn more at edcure.org/podcast. That's edcure.org/podcast. Sponsored by Boston Scientific.
Don't bring in enough good blood flow, and the tunica albuginea, that special sheath we talked about, is not getting expanded enough to push those vessels or compress them enough, and so they're open, and the blood just leaves very quickly. Other things can also cause venous leak. Things like neurologic disorders, cancer treatments, radiation, and Peyronie's disease. Peyronie's disease is when you develop these plaques on your penis, and that can cause deformities like curvature or hourglass. Now, usually when you have a minor venous leak, it's not a huge issue because as long as you have good blood inflow, it will, again, expand enough to compress the veins enough and compensate for the weak veins that are maybe not working or functioning as well as they should. The other major condition that causes vascular ED is diabetes. In fact, 30% of people with ED have diabetes. And if you have diabetes, you are 3.5 times more likely to get erectile dysfunction. And almost half of men with diabetes will have ED. Next, let's talk about ED due to medications. So medications can very commonly cause ED, and some of the most common ones are things like antidepressants, such as fluoxetine, brand name Zoloft, or sertraline, and even anti-anxiety medications like diazepam or Valium, and lorazepam or Ativan. Other classes of medications can be things like antihistamines, even Benadryl, and even other medications that you might take for heartburn. The other big one is high blood pressure medications or water pills. And the most commonly implicated blood pressure medications are thiazides like hydrochlorothiazide and chlorothalidone. And second would be metoprolol or propranolol, which are beta blockers. Now, this is sort of a challenge, right? Because I want you to treat your blood pressure, because if your blood pressure is high, your arteries aren't going to work well and you're going to develop vascular ED anyways. So it's really important, if you're taking these antidepressants or these blood pressure medications, talk to your primary care doctor or your psychiatrist to see if you can switch to another antidepressant or another antihypertensive, because there's so many options available and others have lower risks or even no risk at all. Now, other types of medications I haven't mentioned may include things like chemotherapy, Parkinson's disease medications, painkillers or opioid medications, and recreational drugs. And we'll talk more about recreational drugs a little bit later, but all of these can cause issues with erections, particularly when you're using them quite often and for a chronic or long period of time. Now, another issue is neurologic causes. So neurogenic causes are basically things that can affect nerve function to the penis. These can include things like spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis, or other neurologic conditions. Another 5% of ED comes from things like pelvic surgeries, such as prostatectomy or other surgeries that happen in the pelvis where those nerves to the erections or to the penis are. And lastly, only a very small percent, about 3%, are due to hormones. So oftentimes people think, okay, I'm not getting good erections. If I take testosterone, it's going to fix it completely. But usually it's very multifactorial, and taking testosterone alone will not fix the problem. It may help incrementally and your erections may get slightly better, but that's not always the only cause. And there's usually a multitude of other things going on that are causing difficulties with erections. Now, testosterone is not the only hormone that has problems. You can have issues with your thyroid or other hormones that are in your pituitary gland, like prolactin, which can cause problems with erectile function. Lastly, let's talk about smoking. Smoking can not only cause ED because it damages the blood vessels and the nerves, but it can also cause your penis to shrink. So if that's not an endorsement to stop smoking, I don't know what is. But the reason this happens is because smoking can lower tissue elasticity and cause ultimately smaller erections. Now, the good news is if you stop smoking, particularly if you're young, you can get your normal healthy erections back and preserve your penile length. In fact, if you're smoking, the risk of getting ED increases anywhere from 50% to 116% compared to people who don't smoke. Now, what about other things like alcohol or other drugs? So alcohol in large amounts is a sedative, and it can cause things like low desire, but it can also cause transient erectile dysfunction. Now, that's sort of where the term whiskey dick comes from. If it happens once, it's not a huge issue. You just know that you shouldn't drink that much. However, if you're using alcohol chronically on a long term, it can affect your hormones. It can cause low testosterone, something called hypogonadism, and it can even affect the nerves that cause neurologic erectile dysfunction. So ultimately, you want to monitor your alcohol intake and try to limit your alcohol use to less than one drink a day. We know now that there's really no safe amount of alcohol in terms of cancer prevention. Limiting your alcohol intake as much as possible is great. Now, other drugs like amphetamines, cannabis, opioids, and ecstasy are also risk factors for erectile dysfunction. And what they've shown is that people who use, for example, amphetamines have a 2 times higher odds of developing erectile dysfunction than people who don't. In terms of cannabis consumption, typically lower doses, people don't really notice it, and they may actually say that it improves libido. However, in people who use it long term or use it chronically, it can actually affect the endothelium, again, that lining of the blood vessels, which can cause vascular ED. And it also is because there's cannabinoid receptors in the hypothalamus. And so when you have too much stimulation of those receptors, it can disrupt the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, causing decreased testosterone production and perhaps decreased erectile function. Now, what about pain meds? So if you're chronically using pain meds, there's an 8 times higher odds of having erectile dysfunction compared to non-users. Now, this is more common in people who are using things like methadone or heroin, but still something to consider. It can cause not only ED, but it can also lower ejaculate volumes. Now, what if you're not sexually active? I assume you're probably not listening to this podcast, but if you are, should you still worry about erectile dysfunction? And the answer is a resounding yes. And the first reason is because erectile dysfunction is typically what we call the canary in the coal mine for cardiovascular disease. And this is because the arteries in the penis are significantly smaller than the arteries to the heart. So the arteries to the penis are about 1 to 2 millimeters, and the artery to the heart are 3 to 4 millimeters. So you're going to see blockages of the arteries in your penis first, meaning you're going to have erectile dysfunction long before you ever experience chest pain. And so it's really important, if you identify erectile dysfunction, to go see your primary care doctor. Get your hemoglobin A1C checked, get your triglycerides checked, get your cholesterol checked, get an EKG. Make sure there are no other indicators of heart disease, because if you're diagnosed with ED today, within 7 years, 15% of you may go on to have a heart attack. And this is a real serious issue. The other thing about the correlation with ED is there's also a correlation with ED and cognitive performance. And this is because your brain relies on good blood flow, just like your penis and your heart do. So when you have blood flow problems in your penis, you might also have blood flow problems in your brain. And this means that you might notice cognitive dysfunction. And that means it can affect your cognitive abilities like attention and thinking. So previously, in a study of like 4,000 men, they found that men who had ED over 7 years were 68% more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease and dementia even after they adjusted for cardiovascular risks. So that's pretty remarkable. Another study looked at sort of how erectile dysfunction over several years affected cognitive function. And what they found, that if someone has ED and it gets better, they also tend to have improved memory function. Whereas if someone's erectile function gets worse over time, their memory also gets worse over time. So it follows a trend. And ultimately, the way your penis works is a very good indicator of your overall health. Okay, we're finally getting to the million-dollar question. How does pornography affect erections? Does it cause erectile dysfunction? So if you think about pornography, in studies, I mean, only about 70% of men will admit to using pornography. However, I guess it's probably more than that. Regardless, we know that people use porn for all sorts of different reasons, right? They use it for sexual desire, to satisfy curiosity, to spice up their own relationship, or even to just better understand anatomy. And so a number of studies have looked at men who use pornography, the frequency with which they use pornography, and erectile dysfunction. And they have not found a correlation. They've also looked at it for premature ejaculation and sexual satisfaction, and they found no real correlation of pornography use with ED, with premature ejaculation, or sexual satisfaction. But there are certain people who are at higher risk of having sexual dysfunction and if they use pornography, and that's if they have depressive symptoms, anxiety, stress, maybe some moral incongruence with using pornography. So they may feel religious, or they may have some self-perceived problems with pornography. So if you think you have a problem, you probably do. And these things may put you at higher risk of developing psychogenic ED.
Hey guys, low testosterone or low T affects about 30% of adult men in America. Are you feeling the drag of fatigue, noticing a dip in muscle mass, or sensing a slump in your libido? You might have low T, a condition that can significantly impact a man's life. Get your testosterone level tested. Kyzotrex is an FDA-approved pill that's changing the game in testosterone replacement therapy. Kysotrex was shown to be effective in restoring testosterone levels in nearly 9 out of 10 clinical study participants. Each Kysotrex oral capsule is uniquely formulated to be easily absorbed and bypass your liver to avoid liver damage. Patients also saw a decrease in sex hormone binding globulin and an increase in free testosterone. It's time to break free from injections, pellets, and gels. Choose Kysotrex and take a step towards being the hero of your life. By prescription only, Kysotrex is a controlled substance and can be a target of abuse. Kysotrex is not for use in pregnant women or men with prostate or breast cancer. Safety and efficacy in those younger than 18 is not known. Tell your doctor about all medical conditions and medications. Serious side effects could include increased blood pressure, worsening prostate symptoms, increased risk of prostate cancer, blood clots in the legs or lungs, decreased sperm problems, liver problems, enlarged or painful breasts, and breathing problems while you sleep. Common side effects include swelling of the ankles, feet, or body, increased red blood cell count, and increase in prostate-specific antigen or PSA levels. PSA is a test used to detect prostate cancer. Report these symptoms to your doctor. Call your doctor to learn more about Kysotrex. For questions or more information, visit www.kysotrex.com or call 1-833-949-5040.
When you're using pornography. And you may notice this if you tend to find yourself preferring masturbation with pornography rather than having partnered sex. This puts you at higher risk also because you might start getting very comfortable and habituated to masturbating in a certain type of way with a certain type of stimulation that you get when watching pornography that you can't replicate in a real relationship. And so this is why you have to be mindful about, are you starting to feel this way? Maybe being dynamic about how you masturbate or what sorts of things you fantasize about and using different techniques. All right, so now that you know about ED, how can you fix it? Well, in this episode, we're going to talk about conservative options. So without medication, I'm going to make a whole other podcast about treatments and maybe even one about supplements. So if you want to learn about supplements, please comment either in the YouTube video comments or on Spotify comments. Let me know what exactly you want to learn about, what specific supplements, because there are so many and some have data and some have none. But ultimately, I'd love to cover the ones that you want to learn about. So let's get back to treatment. So first and foremost, you want to treat your underlying health issues. So if you have high blood pressure, get that under control. If you have diabetes, get that under control. If you have high cholesterol, get that under control. Very simply, fix those issues first, because without fixing those issues, you will not be able to reverse your erectile dysfunction and it's just going to get progressively worse. Next up, exercise. So there's been a number of studies that have looked at exercise. In fact, there's been 11 randomized controlled trials comparing people who either get no instruction to people who are instructed on doing some sort of aerobic exercise intervention or resistant exercise intervention. And they compare those. And that allows us to see head to head when you take people who are very similar, if there's really a benefit. And these studies ranged in duration from anywhere from 2 months to 2 years. And they include different types of supervised aerobic exercises. They may have provided resources and counseling. And typically they were doing about 30 to 60 minutes of aerobic exercise somewhere between 3 to 5 times per week. So we're going to focus mostly on the aerobic side of things. So they typically did things like walking 5 times a week, at least with a VO2 max of 55%, which means that you should be able to, which is sort of like zone 2 cardio, which means that you should be able to take a walk and have a conversation with somebody, but they would know that you're exercising. It's not such a leisurely stroll that somebody can't tell. The other exercises they tried were things like cycling, treadmill use, but they made them do it, like I said, for 3 to 5 times a week. And generally, they called it moderate intensity. So what they found ultimately was that aerobic exercise resulted in statistically significant improvements in erectile function compared to people who didn't do any aerobic exercise. And it was generally greater in the men who had more severe ED. So if they had more severe erectile dysfunction, you were going to see a much greater improvement in erectile function versus someone who had mild ED. And that makes sense because if you have mild ED, you have less room to improve. Whereas when you have severe ED, you have a lot more room to improve. And so they did see a significant improvement in all three groups, mild, moderate, severe ED. Everyone saw an improvement. And exercise works because it improves blood vessel function and it allows those blood vessels to improve their nitric oxide production. When you have healthier blood vessels, they release more nitric oxide, which is the ignition for erections. And if you incorporate resistance training, you're also going to see improvements in your testosterone. Now, I've talked about exercise and testosterone in a full video on YouTube. Make sure you check that one out if you want to learn more about it, because I go over what exactly types of exercise have been studied and what you can expect in terms of improvement. Now, in addition to those things, exercise tends to reduce oxidative stress and inflammation, which are both contributors to worsening erections. Next thing you can do, which is completely free, is sleep. Now, I think sleep is the most underutilized treatment in medicine for a lot of different conditions, but even for erectile dysfunction. Now, in small studies, they've looked at sleep and they've shown that improvements, particularly in sleep quality, meaning that you're having uninterrupted sleep, you're getting good amounts of deep sleep or REM sleep, and you're sleeping for sufficient periods of time, usually 7 hours or more, means that you're going to have better erections. Now, as I mentioned, these studies are pretty small and observational, but ultimately sleep has really good evidence in terms of improving testosterone quite significantly. And not only does it improve testosterone and sexual function, it's also going to impact your ability to perform the next day, improve your mental clarity, your sharpness, and your overall mood. So there's so many reasons to work on sleep. And I've had a couple of videos on sleep on my YouTube channel, so check those out. Now, what about food? Everybody wants to know, what should I be eating? So a 2020 study in JAMA, which is a very reputable medical journal, looked at diet quality and dietary patterns associated with erectile dysfunction. Now, this is, again, correlation, but they looked at men from 1998 to 2014. So it's a long period of time, and they looked at what's called food frequency questionnaires. The men were between the ages of 40 and 75, and they had to fill out these food intake questionnaires. And so they had 21,000 men who were on average 62 years of age, and they were followed for about 10 years to see what they were eating and how that affected and how that correlated with erectile function. And they found that men who had the highest score related to the Mediterranean diet, meaning they were following that, they had the lowest relative risk of incident erectile dysfunction, meaning they were the least likely to develop erectile dysfunction compared to those who had a lower score, meaning had poor dietary quality based on this questionnaire, this Mediterranean diet score. Now, this was true for men who are younger than 60, 60 to 70, and even over 70 years. So it doesn't matter how old you are, when you start eating a healthy diet, if you can commit, you will see improvements. Now, what they look at is something called the hazard ratio in terms of your risk of the correlation. It was more impressive if you started younger. So if you were younger than 60, it was a 22% lower risk of developing ED. If you were between 60 and 70, it went to 18%. And if you were over 70, it went to 7%. Now, the best studied diet in terms of healthy diet is the Mediterranean diet. So what is the Mediterranean diet? Well, it emphasizes things like plant-based foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and legumes. It uses olive oil as a primary fat source and nuts, as I mentioned earlier, and consuming fish and poultry in moderate amounts and limiting red meats. And they tend to use more herbs and spices rather than salt. Now, I think the key is to really avoid processed foods and focus on whole natural ingredients. Now, what about specific types of foods? Like, you'll see all these articles online, and like, these are the five foods you want to eat. And actually, there's some data behind certain types of foods. So one is called flavonoid-rich foods. And these are a type of what we call polyphenol. And they're abundant in a variety of plant-based foods. They have lots of antioxidants, and they tend to reduce inflammation and lower the risk of a variety of diseases. And these can include things like apples, citrus fruits, grapes, onions, tea, dark chocolate, and kale. And so in one study looking at the same group of men that they did in that prior study about the Mediterranean diet, it's called the Health Professionals Follow-Up Data, looked at 25,000 men. And they found that those who had a higher intake of these flavonoid-rich foods had a significantly lower incidence of erectile dysfunction. This study was not as remarkable in terms of outcomes as the Mediterranean diet. And so what they found was that it reduced your risk of developing ED by about 9% if you had a higher intake of these flavonoid-rich foods. What about other sort of food items or things that can help? One is omega-3 fatty acids, and these are typically from fish, and they can help increase nitric oxide availability. If you don't eat fish, you can try taking omega-3 supplements. Another food that often comes up is watermelon. And the reason watermelon comes up is because it is a rich source of something called citrulline. And citrulline is an amino acid or a protein building block that's metabolized in our bodies to arginine. And arginine is a precursor for nitric oxide. Again, remember, nitric oxide is the ignition for erections. So a small study found that if you drank somewhere between 3 to 6 cups of watermelon juice per day for 3 weeks, it resulted in an increase in arginine levels in the blood. However, they didn't specifically look at erectile dysfunction. So if you like watermelon, by all means, go ahead and have it. But if you don't force yourself to. So bottom line, what can you do to prevent or reverse ED? So one, increase your physical activity. Try to have 30 minutes a day or 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity aerobic activity. Next, if you are overweight, losing weight has been shown to improve erectile function. So try to lose 5 to 10% of your body weight if you are overweight. Next, improve your diet. Now, we've talked about this quite extensively in this podcast, but what you want to aim to is increase your consumption of fruit and vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. Limit your red meat and processed foods, and reduce your saturated fat to at least 10% or less of your entire calories. Increase your intake of monounsaturated, polyunsaturated fatty acids, and stop drinking sugary drinks. So try to drink water or diet drinks if you have to have something that's a little sweet, but try to avoid things that have added sugar. Avoid excessive alcohol consumption. Try to drink less than 7 drinks a week, and ideally none if you want to follow the newer data that shows that there's really no safe amount of alcohol consumption based on cancer risk. Lastly, quit smoking and don't do any recreational drugs. If you're going to do recreational drugs, be sure not to do them chronically or in excess. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you guys are enjoying this podcast or this longer form content, do me a favor. Share this content with your family or friends. Share it on social media, screenshot it. Do whatever you can to help get the word out, because that helps us grow and share our education with people around the world who really need it. And as always, remember to take care of yourself, because you're worth it.